two-part series that I started last week. So this is both the second and the final installment of a series I started, How the Lord Pastors Us. And it's a, well, really, it's a foreign concept to some people because they don't really think of the Lord as their pastor. They think I'm their pastor. And I am in a way, but in another way, it's really the Lord who is your pastor. And so we really want to emphasize how you can receive from him. And, you know, and as I said, the first service, I'm also thinking about people who have unconventional lives, who have unconventional professions, where you're not in a church service 52 weeks of the year for any number of practical reasons. Just your job, and there's some people who should be in church and they're not because of reasons that aren't really good reasons. But there are other people, just their lives are just, that's how they're structured, right? So to be able to be in a place where you recognize the Lord is your pastor, and that doesn't mean that you're distant from people. It just means that God will customize a pastoral plan for you that involves other people, but just may look different than the most people who go to church, right? And so this is also for you if that is you. And so the Lord really is more our pastor than really people like me that we all call pastor, and the scripture calls us pastors, right? So yes, I am a pastor, and other leaders of churches are pastors, but really we're just extensions of Jesus's leadership. It's Jesus who is leading you. It's Jesus who's leading you. And in sports terms, he's the head coach. I'm the assistant coach. Pastors take their cues from Christ, right, who is the head of us all. So I want to review a verse we looked at last week that really set the tone. We all know it. Psalm 23:1. What does it say? The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. We say that all the time, right? But we don't think to say, because this is what it also means, the Lord is my pastor, I shall not want. The Lord himself. And that's really the power of that psalm, because the Lord, maker of heaven and earth, creator of the universe, is my pastor. He personally leads me. That's profound by itself. He leads me, right? But the question of this series is, do you believe that? And there's some people, you're comfortable trusting God for provision. You know, resources not here, but he'll take care of it. He got it, right? You're comfortable trusting God for protection. You know, there's a storm outside, but he got me, right? You're comfortable trusting God for healing, okay? But many of you are not comfortable trusting God as your pastor because you really don't think of him that way. So when an issue arises in your life and you go, I need my pastor to do dot, 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 whatever that is for you, do you go to the Lord first? Do you go to him? Because really, I have a title as pastor, says it on the website, right? Senior pastor, okay? But really, I just work for him. I just work for him. I'm just one of the people who does and says things on his behalf. He is the true pastor. Again, do you trust him? Because your relationship with him is going to affect your relationship with me. And other people God sends to pastor you. So part of trusting God's pastoring is to understand how he pastors. And so I'm going to review briefly what we discussed last week, five ways that the Lord pastors. One, the Lord pastors submitted people. There's just no other way. He can't lead you any other way. He really can't lead you unless you are submitted to him. That's really important. Because again, people come to church every week for all kinds of reasons. All kinds of reasons. Tradition. My family went to this church, so I go to this church. It just makes my conscience feel good. I feel like I'm a good Christian if I go. I like the music, or I like this program, like the children's ministry, whatever the case may be. People, all kinds of reasons. But you're not submitted. It's almost like, you know, just going to college and taking classes. And you never have like a terminal degree. You just going. It's not amounting to any. Oh, I'll just take this class. This sounds kind of cool. I'll just sit in here. I'll go over here, spending all your money. And you're not getting anything out of it relative to your spiritual growth. Okay? Because you're not submitted. I'm not talking about to me. I'm talking about to him. You do what you want to do. And submitted people are willing to give up what they prefer for the sake of obeying him. That means everything's on the table. Everything. Everything in your house. All your possessions. Oh, your career is on the table. Where you live is on the table. Who you date and who you are dating is on the table. Everything. Your priorities on the table. Your 401k on the table. Your job on the table. At any point in time, he can speak into that and say something about it, and the expectation is you will respond. Now, it's okay to wrestle with things, we all do, and take some time to allow your heart to receive and respond to the Lord's instructions. We're human beings. I wrestle with things the Lord's given me, right? I mean, so that we're human beings. That's going to happen, okay? But if it's a hard no to anything in your life that he's telling you to address, you are not a submitted person. You are hard-hearted and a person that God cannot lead. That's the first way he pastors. Number two, tied to the first one. The Lord leads you to places you would not have gone if left to your own devices. A lot of people today, especially today, think pastoring is about helping you reach your goals. And you listen to some people communicate to their flocks, and it's almost like motivational speaking. I can help you to do X or Y. And, you know, our path with the Lord does certainly include, because God puts things in our heart. He wires us a certain way, and he allows our passions to be tied to things that he has for us, and that's totally fine. But it's not about you reaching your personal goals. It's about becoming more and more and more and more and more and more like Christ. That's your goal. That's hashtag goals, Christ. I'm not going to go to the passage, but Paul is saying, I will forsake everything I even have accomplished in my life for the sake of knowing him and the power of his resurrection. That's where he's leading us. And to get us there, it may require us to lead us away from things we prefer or toward things we want to avoid. That's part of it. But it's good. It's a song we sing. It's so much better. My life is so much better. We sing it sometimes by C.C. Winans. When I'm following you, we got to keep saying that to ourselves, because when it, woo, all right, Lord, woo, it's so much better. But you got to trust it. You got to believe by faith that the sacrifice you're making is better than if left to your own devices. Number three, the Lord pastors through representatives, other human beings, flawed like you. They just people. And certainly the scripture gives criteria, because, I mean, we all have flaws, but you got to have some things together. You can't just be out there. You got to have some things together before you lead a flock, right? So there's some basic requirements of people that we see, and we're not going to go over right now, but there are some requirements. But listen, and I want to say this, okay? And I'm not saying this out of trying to be authoritarian or anything like that, but listen, when I'm pastoring out of God's grace to pastor, or I'm teaching out of God's grace to teach, you see how I did that? Okay, because I'm not infallible. I'm flawed. I have blind spots. I need advice and things. I'm not perfect, right? But I'm saying, to the degree that I am pastoring under his grace, or the degree that I'm teaching under his grace, then guess what? That's God talking to you. And your life is better if you heed him talking to you through me when he's talking to you through me.
or anybody who God has set you under their flock, you need to listen to what they're saying. And listening means doing. Listening in, from Christian listening is not just listening. Christian listening is listening and doing. So these representatives, their job is to do what he says, not what you say. And people are confused about this because the pastor in their heads is in the shape of their felt needs. We talked about felt needs last week. Felt needs are needs you feel, but are symptoms, not causes. And man, people come to church and they want the church or they want the pastor to meet their felt needs. And sometimes the Lord will lead me or the pastoral team to meet your felt needs, similar to, you know, those of us who have kids, especially when they're really little and they're sick, you can't deal with the cause. You got to just make the symptoms. You want them to go to sleep. So you give them the Tylenol, whatever. You just deal with the symptoms. They say, mommy, it hurts. I just to make it go away. They're going to be that way for a little bit. You just need something for them to go to sleep. So sometimes got to deal with the symptoms, but at other times you got to deal with that cause. But we feel like but what happens is when we start going cause instead of symptoms, people feel like I'm not really being pastored because you're not responding to this, but your issue is that. But I want you to deal with this. No, but your issue is that. Now, it isn't just pastors that he sends to you as representatives, but it's also other believers with spiritual gifts. They may not be a pastor, but God uses their gifts to pastor you. Because who's the pastor? Him. And he don't have to wait till Sunday morning when I'm talking. He can get you anytime he wants through another believer with spiritual gifts. That's why small groups are important, but even beyond small groups, to be around other believers, because he may be using someone in that group to speak to you. So we should be in expectation when we gather with other believers, because you don't know what's going to hit you from the Lord. Sometimes the most unsuspecting person will have a word for you, or in their gift of mercy, or their gift of service, or sometimes, you know, some people come around you and they just shake your hand and there's some money in there. That's some people's gift. They have a gift to give. And sometimes God does that just to encourage you. But beyond even people with spiritual gifts, you just need wise people in your life. He pastors you through wise people. Proverbs 12:15 says this, the way of a fool is right in his own eyes, but a wise man, a really wise people, listen to advice. God pastors you through the advice of wise people. He pastors you through the wisdom of other people. You got to have them in your life. And if you don't realize that, you'll be a loner and just stream or just attend service. Don't talk to anybody. You're making decisions and you're not getting anybody else to weigh in on it. And you are lost and you wonder why your life is falling apart. You don't get advice from people. And if they give you advice, you don't take it. So that was the third quality. God pastors us through representatives. Okay, number four, the Lord pastors through representatives with different gifts, callings, and contexts. What that means is every pastor is different, and you really shouldn't compare them because of that, because they're all different. We're all different. We're all wired differently. We all have different spiritual gifts, have different natural gifts and experiences. You know, the specific skill set and background that my father had to found that church, this church was exactly what was needed to bring the church and pastor it for 30 years. He had the exact skill set and makeup for this, and the exact makeup and skill set and personality type that I have is precisely what's needed to continue leading the church. And if you go to any other church and God has called that pastor and called that church, that pastor has the precise gift, a matrix, and skill set for that church. He makes us different because he's taken us all to different places. And so sometimes you're sort of disoriented because you might see a pastor, and but well, this other pastor did it like this. There are basic things every pastor has to do, but we're all different because God has taken us all to really the same place in him, but in different ways. You know, I used to live in San Bernardino County, and I would commute down there. You had all kind of options. You could take the 10, you know. You could, what was the other, the 210? I'm trying to read the 60. You got kind of all kind of options. We're all getting back to L.A., but we can go different ways. And you just got to know what flock the Lord has assigned you to and know which way the flock you're in is going. Which leads us to number 5. The Lord pastors in groups through groups. I know the Lord is your personal Lord and Savior, and that's nice to say, and it's true, but he leads us in groups of people. Being a part of a flock is really, really important because he pastors in groups, but also through groups. He pastors using teams of people. In fact, I'm gonna. We talked about it last week, but I'm gonna use a different scripture this week. We're gonna look at 1 Peter 5, verse 1. Notice what it says. This is Peter talking to the leaders of a local church. He says, "So I exhort the senior pastor. I exhort the elders," right? A plurality of leaders, right? "I exhort the elders among you as a fellow elder." So Peter certainly is an apostle, but he also is a pastoral, right? And especially in this letter here. So as a fellow elder, he's calling himself an elder, okay? "And a witness of the sufferings of Christ, as well as a partaker in the glory that is going to be revealed." What does he say in verse 2? Shepherd the flock of God. That's a team goal. That's not just one senior leader. And they may have had a senior elder, and that's fine, okay? But they all have the responsibility of shepherding. All of the elders, right? And so they have that responsibility. And we said last week, elder, pastor, bishop, they all basically mean the same thing. Sometimes in our cultural circles, we'll use them to kind of acknowledge seniority, and that's fine. We don't understand what those things mean, but in essence, they all basically mean shepherd the flock, okay? And because it's ultimately God's flock, it's not theirs. So he says, "Shepherd the flock of God that is among you, exercising oversight, not under compulsion, but willingly as God would have you, not for shameful gain, but eagerly, not domineering over those in your charge, but being example to the flock." Verse 4, "And when the chief shepherd appears," and when the chief shepherd appears, you know what chief shepherd means? Senior pastor. And the only time it's used in scripture, it's applied to Jesus. He is the senior pastor. There's just, as I said last week, there's just one church. Different locations. But he is the senior pastor. "When the chief shepherd appears," he says, "you will receive the unfading crown of glory." This is really why pastors should be the true motivation to pastor well. It is because I'm going to be held accountable for what I'm doing before the Lord. And there's a crown specifically for pastors for shepherding the flock of God. Jesus is our senior pastor. The people we call pastor are really associate pastors. Some people call them under shepherds, people who lead the flock but are subordinate to the chief shepherd. And really, I like to think of it like this. I just think the people we call pastors just really tricked out small group leaders. Really, because it's, like I said, just one church. Jesus is the pastor, and local churches are just big small groups. And they're the practical means by which Jesus pastors us. So again, he's pastoring us. Okay, so here's where it gets interesting, and I made a decision to have a heart-to-heart with you today to talk to you, again, to help you understand pastoring a bit more from a biblical perspective, because, you know, you go to church all your life, and no one necessarily tells you these things. You just kind of just, you it's almost like a lot of things. You kind of go, you don't ask questions, we just do stuff that everybody does, and nobody, you don't really understand the relationship. And so people will go to church for years and get nothing out of it or get very little out of it. Many of us know people like this. Some of you, you are people like this. You've been going to church for years and your life just hasn't changed a whole lot. You're pretty much the same person you were 10 years ago. And there are a number of reasons for that, but it's part of it is understanding how the Lord pastors us. And so we're going to look at some models from Moses to help us to understand, because our church is, I'll just say that for the last 5 years or so, especially when I started pastoring, we got met with COVID. So that just changed the landscape of everything, as many other pastors. But we've been taxiing. And by that, I don't mean the taxi cab. I mean the airplane. When we're going to take off. You've been on the runway for a long time. We just been taxiing. But let me tell you, we're about to take off. And some things I got to, when we take off, I won't have time to sit down and tell you all this. So I'm telling you now. We're going to have our heart to heart right now, so that when we start increasing in altitude, you're like, you know what? We talked about that. Yep, we talked about that. And you'll know what to do. You won't be confused or disoriented, because when we take off, things will move faster. Then it's sometimes time to explain in a single moment. And so you need to be put in position now to understand. So we're going to look at how Moses pastored, and then we're going to look at how Jesus pastored as a model for us as we enter into a new season as a church. We're on the verge of it. I'm really excited. Our building is almost, we'll be in there. Our new sanctuary will be in there sometime between the last quarter of this year and the first quarter of next year. And I have this long window because, there's all kinds of variables, one of which is the county and the city approving the drawings. You don't know how long they're going. So we're praying that they go faster rather than slower. But I mean, that could take like 2 months, just that by itself. So those are the kind of variables. And also, too, when they start going into walls and things, and we had plans and they open up a wall and they see new things, we got to respond to that. So we have a basic timetable in our head, but there are variables, okay? But that said, we're looking forward to being there within a matter of months, not years. Okay, so we're excited about that. And as we enter into that space, it's not just entering into that space, it's the place it will put us in to be situated differently. That there are some spiritual things that will open up as well as natural things, and as that happens, we just need to be mentally and spiritually prepared for how God is pastoring us. So we're going to look at a model from Moses in terms of some wisdom that he received from his father-in-law about pastoring. We're going to look at Exodus 18, verse 13, starting here. And here you have Moses. It's Exodus, so he's fresh off the deliverance from Egypt. He has all these people. There are hundreds of thousands of people he's pastoring. This is quite the mega church, right? And he's leading them. In verse 13, it says, "The next day Moses sat to judge the people, and the people stood around Moses from morning till evening." Okay, Moses is committed. He's a good-hearted man. He's a good-hearted man, and he is personally taking care of his flock. Again, hundreds of thousands of people. And you can imagine, if it's that many people, you would be doing this from morning till evening. How else would you do it? How else would you do it with that many people, okay? But then his father-in-law came along, said, well, when Moses' father-in-law saw all that he was doing for the people, he said, "What is this that you are doing for the people?" Okay? He's asking Moses to think critically. Again, we come to church every week for years. Has anyone stopped to ask you, what is it you're actually doing? And why are you doing it? Some of you never thought about it. You just go out of habit, out of default. What else are you going? Like, for some of you, this is all you've ever done on Sunday, so you just come to church. But why? Why are you here? Okay. In Moses' case, Moses is doing something, right? I mean, he's shepherding God's flock. He says, what is it that you are doing for the people, Jethro is asking, and why do you sit, listen, alone? Hundreds of thousands of people, you are personally pastoring them by yourself. Why? Moses probably hadn't thought about it, right? He says, why do you sit alone and all the people, like every single one of them, stand around you from morning till evening? Think about this. Without even knowing the rest of the passage, you can anticipate what Jethro is going to say. Right? And Moses said to his father-in-law, well, because the people come to me to inquire of God. Let's find that one. Okay. They coming to you. They trying to talk to God, so they come to you. They have a problem that's a God-sized problem, but they come to you. I have a problem that's bigger than me and you, but I'm coming to you. This is Moses' response. And guess, Moses is a good-hearted man. And listen, now that I think about it, he probably has thought about it, but he don't think he can stop. What they gonna think? I mean, they gonna think I don't care about them? Or, I mean, who else is gonna counsel them? I mean, what? I mean, all these people, what we gonna do? He says, because the people come to me to inquire of God. Verse 16, when they have a dispute, they come to me. And I decide between one person and another, and I make them know the statutes of God and his laws. In other words, for each person, he gives them an individualized, customized sermon. They don't all gather together like this, so he can teach them at one time. He just individually preaches to each person that comes to them. They got their own personal Bible study. So verse 17, Moses' father-in-law said to him, what you are doing is not good. But it is placating your guilt to do it. And it is placating their felt need. But it no good is actually coming out of the arrangement. But we just keep doing it. And people do that in church. They just come to church every week, no good coming out of it, and they just keep doing the same thing. Verse 18, he says, listen, you and the people with you will certainly wear yourselves out. So Moses, you're going to be tired, and they're going to be tired. You're not going to be any good. And because you're no good, they're not going to be no good. And it's just y'all going to be not good together. Miserable. We're in Los Angeles. Many of us watched the Lakers lose in the playoffs. And that interesting fourth game in the series where the coach, J.J. Redick, took his starters and played them for the entire second half. Never done in NBA's history because he didn't trust his bench. It's never been done. 40-year-old LeBron. and Luka, who's just getting, you know, he's getting implemented into the system. It seemed like it would help, but it's helping, not helping. Because at the end, they're all tired, making mistakes. Verse 18, you and the people with you will certainly wear yourselves out, for the thing is too heavy for you. You are not able to do it alone. It's not possible. Even if you wanted to be a super pastor and fly in to rescue everybody who put, had a rescue signal on, you couldn't do it. But that's the model we like. You got pastors who love to be needed. And you got congregations who love for the pastor to personally meet their need. And guess what? It's not good. That's not how God designed it. Unless it's a church of 20, 30 people. That's different. And most churches around the world, they're under 200, under 100 people. So most people are going to go to smaller churches. That's okay. We're not in that situation. It's impossible. Okay? But the Lord doesn't leave us there. He gives advice from his father-in-law. So his father-in-law weighs in. Exodus 18, 19 says, listen, now obey my voice. You got to have people in your life that you will obey. We had just talked about advice. They don't have any formal authority over you. They may not be your pastor, but you have their they have your respect. So if they tell you no, you won't do it. Is there anybody like that in your life? You got to have people like that in your life. It can't just be you and God. He going to talk to you through other people. Oh, and God is talking to Moses through Jethro. This is a man who talks to God himself. You listen, pastors need pastors too. Pastors still got to be pastored by the Lord. And he'll send people in your life to speak to. Even though he speaks to God face to face, he'll still send somebody else. So you can forge a submitted heart too. Verse 19, it says, now obey my voice. I will give you advice, and God be with you. You shall represent the people before God and bring their cases to God. And you shall warn them about the statutes and the laws and make them know the way in which they must walk and what they must do. Moreover, look for able men from all the people, men who fear God, who are trustworthy and hate a bribe, and place such men over the people as chiefs of thousands, of hundreds, of fifties, and of tens. He's giving him what? A strategy. You know, people always complain when the church goes corporate. But when you start dealing with people with a certain size, you need the benefits of a corporation to complement and supplement ministry. And people are afraid that it will become impersonal when you do that. But can I share something with you? And I said it last week. Churches go corporate, but congregations go corporate because you become a consumer. And every interaction with the church is transactional. You're committed as long as we meet your felt need. So congregations feed into this. They go corporate with their, they bring their, you treat the church like it's AMC theater. You treat the church like it's Disneyland. You treat the church like you got, you know, and so what happens in response, you get corporate back. And also some of this is practicality. But what Jethro is saying, that you can put in these symptoms, but it doesn't mean the personal touch has to be lost. Even as we grow in size, which is, what I'm insinuating as I talk about our future, I'm talking about numerical growth. And again, when it starts happening, it's going to happen. It's almost going to feel like one minute we here and next minute we over here. When did that happen? And the opportunity to sit and talk about it like this, the opportunities to do that won't be the same. And you shouldn't feel a way about it when it happens, but you'll know, oh, okay, here's how the Lord has passed through me. Here's how I do that. So Jethro is giving him instructions. Verse 22, he says, and let them judge. Yes, other people other than the senior pastor can pastor. Let them judge the people at all times. Uh-oh. What the pastor going to be doing if they doing all the judging? Okay, let them judge the people at all times, but here's what the senior pastor is going to do. Is every great matter they shall bring to you, but any small matter they shall decide themselves. Decide themselves. Decide themselves. Decide themselves. Decide themselves. So it will be easier for you and they will bear the burden with you. In other words, we're pastoring the church. Now, again, when I say that, I don't mean everyone is a pastor by gift, but I will say he will use your spiritual gifts to pastor people he is shepherding. He will communicate to them through you in your spiritual gift. Verse 23, if you do this, God will direct you and you will be able to endure, and all the people also will go in their place in peace. Let me just focus on 23. You will be able to endure. Listen, church, we got to make a decision. Not really, because I already made the decision. Either I'm a pastor for years or I'm a pastor for decades. Which one are we going to do? Oh, decades only happening if we switch it up. We got to work together. Right? And guess what? And all the people also will go in their place in peace. You're going to have more peace spending less time with me. Now, some people, we're going to spend more time together. And some people, we're going to spend less time together personally. That's okay. Don't mean I don't like you. That don't mean that at all. And you're going to be so blessed. It's going to people who are going to minister to you better than me. And if I don't step out the way, you won't receive the ministry. So to review Jethro's instructions, first one, he says, I'm just summarizing what Jethro says. First of all, he said, Moses, give the burdens of the people to God in prayer. Moses, we're going to free you up to pray more, right? Number two, teach people in large gatherings. They all need an individualized, customized sermon. Just give them all the instruction at one time, right? Number three, delegate responsibility. We see James 5 and 14. We read this last week, but let me read it again. Is anyone among you sick? Let him call for the senior pastor of the church. Elders. Does it matter which one? Absolutely not. You just come in faith, right? In verse 15, and the prayer of faith will save the one who was sick. You gonna get healed? Just go to find an elder. Galatians 6, verse 1, it says, brothers, if anyone is caught in any transgression, you who are spiritual should restore him in a spirit of gentleness. You who are spiritual. That ain't necessarily a senior pastor. That's any faithful Christian. It ain't just a senior pastor job. It is the job of any faithful Christian to respond to people who find themselves in transgression. Romans 15, 1, we who are strong have an obligation. We who are strong have an obligation. That ain't just pastors, that ain't just elders, that ain't just deacons. We who are strong have an obligation, what? To bear with the failings of the weak and not to please ourselves. God did not call you to be a content consumer. And just consume content. Just consume, whether you're here in person or you're online. You won't find that in the Bible. You have an obligation to help pastor the church. That is the Lord pastoring through you. Again, you won't necessarily be called to be a pastor per se, but he's using your gifts so that the Lord will use those gifts to pastor that individual. And then he told Moses to only address the big issues. Can I be frank with you, tell you what some of these big issues are, just so you know? Okay, so I did an exercise with the leaders in the volunteer meeting a few months ago, and I asked them questions like, what do you think I do, or how would you like to be pastor? How do you think God what do you think God wants from a pastor? And I told them, I bet you didn't have on the list crisis management. To be honest with you, I started pastoring here in 2019, or at least sharing the responsibility with my father, and then 2020 got here. And since then, the whole time, it's been crisis management. COVID, politics, economy, crisis management. They don't teach you that in seminary. I didn't go to seminary, so there you have it. Then we had internal factors. We didn't know what a virtual church was. What does that look like? How does that work? People act different after COVID. They act different on their job. They act different at church. They act different in every institution which you were coming in person. Everybody's behavior changed. Oh, let's throw in a fire in the sanctuary and then still have service that same day. So the whole time it's been what? Crisis management. And that's a huge part of my job. I like it or not, we hear. And then there's hidden factors that create crisis. They're good things, but they ain't good to you in your mind. They'll create crisis for you. Like what? Leadership transition. Leadership transition is good. It's good for the longevity organization. But if we're doing things you didn't sign up for, you don't feel that's good. How about 4G? What's 4G? What's that? That mobile phone? What are we talking about? What is that? Where are we going? Why are we saying that? That multi-generational stuff is a good thing, but if you didn't sign up for that, it ain't good to you. How about diversity? We already talked about that for a lot of weeks, right? It's a good thing, but if you ain't ready for it, it don't seem good to you. And so it creates a stressor for you, even though it's good. So that's also a crisis that has to be managed, even though it's good. And what happens is, with all these crisis moments, I gave you 9 of them, the church changes, so people change. And that includes, folks, people leaving the church. And that's okay, because some people leave for healthy reasons. So change in the church helps them to become aware of the changes they need to make in their lives. And so they just become awakened to things they need to do. And so it's a healthy thing for some people. Other people, it's not healthy, because changes in the church are emotionally triggering. And the only way they know how to manage conflict is to shut down or leave. That's their one go-to move. That's the extent of their development. If they get in a conflict, they are shutting down or they are leaving. That's what they do. So the net result is you have an absence of leaders where you used to have leaders in a certain position, then you don't. That's another crisis. Got to be managed, right? So filling leadership gaps. Building systems, let's rebuild youth ministry, let's rebuild music ministry, let's rebuild discipleship ministry. So most of my time as a pastor is meetings. Lord, deliver me from meetings. But you gotta be in the meetings, because the meetings need, you can't just be logistical and money, and you also have to have pastoral direction and insight. But I can't be the only one who got that. And until we have more, then I got to be in those meetings. Meetings don't sound fun until the lights come off, until the check don't clear. Right? I mean, I'm being funny here, but those are the kinds of things we take for granted, that you can come here every week without interruption, COVID or fire. That is not true about every church. We take that for granted. That requires meetings. That requires corporate. But what I'm saying to you, listen, I'm a different kind of dude. I got 2 jobs on purpose. I teach at Biola University. When I was asked, invited to pastor here, I said, I got to keep my other job because I actually like my career. It gives me a lot of benefits. It lets me use my gifts. It allows me to use my degrees and my professional training. I didn't go to seminary. I got a doctorate in English literature, did my dissertation on Nat Turner, studied American literature, 19th century American literature. That's what I do. That's what I do. Here, you just see a small part of me, right? And teaching at Biola, my kids get to have a chance to go to college for free at Biola or another Christian school in some secular schools like USC. I get opportunities for promotion, exposure to other professional opportunities. You ain't giving that up. If the Lord ain't told me to get, why am I giving that up? For what? But most importantly, God's called me to it, because we different here. I'm different, so we different. And so I see our young people are here. They're ready to get baptized. So I'm going to close with this. They all ready for us. I can't preach too much longer here. Okay, because they're here. Okay? So I'm going to say this. I'm not going to go over the passage in detail, but in Numbers 11, verse 10, actually Numbers 11, you should read that. It talks about even though Jethro spoke to Moses and gave him the system, Moses started feeling the stress again, and he started feeling actually getting suicidal thoughts because of the burden of the ministry. I'll just read that passage. Numbers 11, verse 15, he says this. He's talking to God. He says, if you will treat me like this, kill me at once. If I find favor in your sight that I might not see my wretchedness. He was just burnt out over the people complaining, their needs. They always coming to him. They want meat. They tired of quail. They tired of the bread. They just complaining, and he's stressed out. And so what God tells him is, in verse 16, he says, then the Lord said to Moses, gather for me 70 men of the elders of Israel, whom you know to be the elders of the people and officers over them, in verse 17, and I will come down and talk with you there, and I will take some of the spirit that is on you and put it on them. God wants to take the spirit that is on me and put it on you so you can help pastor the church. But to do that, we're going to have to spend time together, not like this. These young people are in here and they can attest. I've been in there almost every week for several weeks, spending time with them from 10 a.m. to 11 a.m. And we have some different, I'm different over there. I ain't over there like I'm here. It's different. I'm just a different person over there because I'm unleashed. I don't even preach like this. I normally preach on Sunday. Ain't really how I preach, but I adjust to the needs of the congregation. But there's some of you out there, you're leaders, and you can't be fed just like this. You need other kind of meat. When you always on, you're always doing ministry, that's lonely. Who ministers to you? So we got to create another tier of folks where you get in different kind of ministry. And there's some of you, you're not in leadership, but you need more than what Sunday morning offers. And you know my schedule and you know your schedule. We aren't going to show up together on Wednesday night. That just ain't going to happen. We know we're not doing that. Because I'm going to come every week and you're going to come when you feel like it. It's like preparing a whole gourmet meal and nobody RSVP. So what we're going to do is, you know, every year I go on my 5-week sabbatical. In the summer, I'm going to do that. When I come back, we're going to have some times of impartation for folks who want to go deeper. From 10 a.m. to 11, I said, if I can do it with the young people, I can do it with the adults. Okay? And listen, it's going to be a waiting list because we just have a lot of people. We definitely want our leaders to go through it, okay? And we're going to do it where we're a few weeks on and a few weeks off. So you can learn, then apply, then come back and tell us how it went. But it'll be a different kind of engagement, and you're going to need it. We're going to need it for where God is taking us. We can't be here next year. I'll say that. Where we are right now, as all the good that's happening, we can't still be here. We got to be somewhere else. And we got to prepare. All right? So more details to come in the weeks to come. In the meantime, we got some young people to baptize.